From the heart of our nation's capital, here's Family Research Council President Tony Perkins.
Good afternoon and welcome to a special D-Day edition of Washington Watch.
Lord, give us faith. Give us faith in Thee, faith in our sons, faith in each other, and faith in our united crusade. Thy will be done, Almighty God. Amen.
That was President Donald Trump quoting from President Franklin D. Roosevelt's D-Day prayer as he spoke yesterday in Portsmouth, England, in a tribute to D-Day veterans. The words of that prayer were unveiled today at the World War II Memorial, where they've been missing since the memorial's construction back in 2004. Ohio Senator Rob Portman, along with Congressman Bill Johnson, have led an effort to have the prayer added to the memorial. Senator Portman joins us in just a moment. And President Trump was at Normandy earlier today and spoke about what motivated and enabled the men who were a part of one of the most significant military operations in human history to succeed. Quote, they were sustained by the confidence that America can do anything because we are a noble nation with a virtuous people praying to a righteous God. End quote. Our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin is here to reflect on the significance of the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion and what will be needed in the 21st century to keep freedom alive and well. We'll also talk about the reason members of the military and military veterans are supportive of this president, something that seems to puzzle the media. All that and more on this special edition of Washington Watch. The website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it is at T. Perkins. Well, on the eve of the 70th anniversary of the D-Day invasion, Congress, in a rare bipartisan moment, passed the granted unanimous consent in the Senate for Senate Bill 1044, the World War II Memorial Act. And two weeks later, the U.S. House of Representatives passed the measure and sent it on to President Obama, who signed the bill on June 30th, 2014. Well, today, earlier today, a temporary plaque with the prayer from FDR was added to the memorial. It will soon be a permanent place there on the memorial. But the man who was behind driving this, Senator Rob Portman of Ohio, joins us now. Senator, welcome to Washington Watch.
Tony, thanks so much for having me on.
Senator, I have to imagine that today there was a sense of satisfaction that finally, after a number of years, the words of the prayer that FDR prayed on D-Day are now on the memorial here in Washington, D.C., honoring those who served in World War II.
It is so important that we have that prayer. You know, I love the World War II Memorial. I'm sure you've been there for some of the Freedom Flights, Tony, and it's extraordinary the number of veterans who come to see this memorial and to pay their respects. But it's also really important that we put it in context. And part of that is having this World War II D-Day prayer included as part of the memorial. Franklin Delano Roosevelt could have given one of his speeches. He gave them all the time, his fireside chats. Instead, he chose to turn to the Almighty. And by doing so, he gave people inspiration, including our troops who were headed toward those beaches of Normandy.
Yeah, it's and I'm going to play the prayer from FDR here in a moment, but it's remarable that when we look back on that time, a president, and he invited the nation to join him in prayer, praying for their sons who were fighting on the shores there in Europe, in France. Well, let me ask you this. When you looked back on it, you mentioned the significance of it. What motivated you to take this on as a project to get this memorial kind of, I think, in proper historical context to reflect the prayer, the faith of the president and the nation?
Exactly. I love the prayer. You know, I am very inspired by it. I'm glad that decided prayer and invoking the Almighty on that critical day, the day that some people say was the most important day of the 20th century, because that's when we finally were able to prevail against Hitler and then moving on through Belgium and France, liberate Western Europe. But I also love the content of the prayer. And one of the things that, as you know, is part of this prayer is Roosevelt talking about who we are as a people. And it's consistent with what the president said, who, as you say, quoted some of the prayer just yesterday. Roosevelt said, you know, these are men who are drawn from the ways of peace. They fight not for the lust of conquest. They fight to end conquest. They fight to liberate. They fight to let justice arise. So this is who we are. And in World War II in particular, we lost hundreds of thousands of our best and brightest and asked for nothing in return. In fact, we then helped Europe. All we asked for in return was enough land to bury our dead, which is what you see over there now with these stark military cemeteries with the crosses and the Stars of David lining these fields of Normandy. So I think that's also an important part of the prayer, what it says about who we are as Americans.
And obviously it's important that we preserve our history, because as we understand who we were, it has a shaping influence on who we'll become as a nation. And I
Absolutely.
Think it's very important that we preserve, protect, and promote this faith component of America and America's fabric. And I'm so – that's one of the reasons I'm thankful for this president. I think this president is one who understands the importance of that and has brought it back into the public square.
Yeah, no question about it. I was asked by a reporter today at the National Mall, where we recited the prayer once again. I was asked, well, is this appropriate to have a prayer on the Mall of the United States? And I said, well, look around you. You know, here we have the Lincoln Memorial, where Lincoln invoked the Almighty constantly. We have the Pledge of Allegiance. In the Senate, every day we open with a prayer. Certainly George Washington, the father of our country, used his faith and talked about his faith consistently. So our own Declaration of Independence says we were endowed by our Creator, which makes us special and at that time really unique among the countries of the world. So I think it's consistent with our history, and that's part of the reason I think it's important to have that prayer on the Mall.
Well, that brings up a really, I think, important question, Senator Portman. Even a reporter asking that question, is it appropriate? Are you concerned that we've lost the understanding of the importance of that religious and spiritual foundation in our nation?
I think most people have not, and yet I think sometimes, I mentioned the media person asking me, sometimes, you know, there's a group in our country that somehow thinks that this is not consistent with the American tradition and who we are and who we should be. But I think most Americans, Tony, appreciate the fact that the president invokes prayer, as, by the way, previous presidents have as well. President Bush, with whom I worked, as you know, for whom I worked in the White House, was very focused on his faith and how it drove his policy decisions. President Obama invoked faith. Certainly President Franklin D. Roosevelt was not considered a conservative and was someone who many Democrats hold up. He used faith not just in this context, but if you look at his writings and look at his speeches, he often talked about the importance to faith for him and helped inspire America by talking about the importance of having faith in God.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Ohio Senator Rob Portman, my guest, talking about the prayer of President Franklin Delano Roosevelt that was added today in a temporary plaque on the World War II Memorial. Now, it will be permanent shortly. And Senator, I want to talk about that for just a moment, kind of what's the process here. I know that you passed the legislation. The funds that would put this on the memorial have to be privately raised. That's in process. What's the timeline here?
Well, first, Tony, it's taken too long and it's frustrating, but the mall is a sacred place and there are a couple of commissions you have to go through, and the Park Service and the Friends of the National World War II Memorial also had to be brought into this, and they've been terrific. They are actually a nonprofit that can accept contributions, so we are providing contributions to them. We've got some very generous friends around the country who are helping us with this. I wrote the bill in a way that it required private citizens to step forward. I didn't think this should be something the taxpayers are asked to do, so I'm okay with that, but we do need to raise the funds, because putting the permanent plaque there will require us to actually improve and beautify a part of the World War II Memorial. It's called the Circle of Remembrance. It's a reflective area. I think it's an appropriate place to have the prayer. We're also going to be fixing that up a little bit for them. So there's some funding needs here. I'm sure we will find, by telling people the importance of having this prayer on the mall, the funding that we need. But my hope is that we'll have the temporary prayer there just through this summer, and then this fall we can get started on the permanent inscription, so that it's there for future generations, and so they understand not just the importance of prayer, but also the importance of this particular prayer and what it says about us as a country.
Now, there's also a sense of, I think, urgency here. The legislation, as I understand it, is there a time frame in which this has to be done?
2021. So we are we're trying to be sure that we don't, you know, now that we have the design approved finally and we have the location approved finally, we want to be sure we move ahead with it quickly. And I think we will. I've talked to the Trump administration about it. They support it. The new director of the Park Service supports it. So I think we might get a little better traction now.
Well, as you said, given how slow bureaucracy moves, 2021 will be here before you know it. So we certainly would encourage people to move this along and provide the funding as necessary to get that done. We'll have a link at our website where people, if they'd like to participate in this. But, Senator, I want to thank you for leading out on this effort. I think it's extremely important that this, which is such a key part of who we are as a people, our faith, and that we've had leaders that pray. The fact that the president of the United States led the country in prayer, the fact that we had generals like Patton leading the troops in prayer, those are important things that must be preserved in our history.
Yes, and again, I would encourage people to take a look at this D-Day prayer. Again, it's a beautiful prayer. It, again, talks about who we are as a people, but it also talks about the importance of faith. It talks about the importance for our own faith, but also our faith in our country and our faith in our troops. And I think Franklin Roosevelt, frankly, gave this prayer at a time when it was very uncertain. And that's why he chose a prayer, because we didn't know whether we could succeed that day. And he understood the significance of not succeeding, which is that Hitler may well have been able to prevail in Western Europe, which would have changed the future of our world. So it ends by saying, "Thy will be done, Almighty God. Amen." So it was a prayer that spoke directly to God and asking Him for His help as we face this incredible foe.
Well, you know what? I think that's an extremely important point, because on this side of history, we know how it turned out. At that point, they didn't know. They didn't know what the future of the world looked like. And there was a total, and you can see it in the prayer. And folks, I'm going to play the prayer in the next segment. But there was a total, absolute dependence, even desperation, for God to move and bless the efforts that we were undertaking on behalf of the free world.
Yeah. He asks in the prayer, he says, "Embrace these, Father, and receive them, thy heroic servants, into thy kingdom." He was referring to those who would not return, because it was also one of the bloodiest battles in our history. Mm-hmm. 10,000 people died that day. A lot of brave Americans who risked it all for liberation of Western Europe. And so it was a powerful moment, and it was the right thing to do, to go to prayer. And it has to be part of our history.
Well, Senator Portman, thank you for doing your part to preserve that part of our nation's important history. And thanks for joining us today.
Thanks, Tony. Appreciate you. Take care.
All right. Senator Rob Portman of Ohio. To find out more how you might be able to help in this effort, you can go to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links over. When we come back, I'm actually going to play that prayer for you of FDR. It is a stirring, moving prayer that you have to think about it in the context of where we were as a nation, not knowing what the future might be. And I think in many ways, we're still at a point like that, or we're at a point like that again. And we need as a nation to cry out to God, asking Him for His blessing and direction as we live in a very, very dangerous world. All right, don't go away. We're coming back with more of this special D-Day edition of Washington Watch right after this.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. While the specific threats to religious freedom vary in type and intensity, one common source is the legal and cultural support for apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws, which often threaten the freedom to choose or change one's faith. In a new publication from Family Research Council, we list which nations around the world have these unjust laws on the books and spotlight people who have faced severe penalties simply for sharing or changing their faith. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That's frc.org/ABA laws.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
Welcome back to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins, the website tonyperkins.com. On June 6, 1944, President Franklin Roosevelt went on the radio and led the nation in prayer. Avoiding any trace of bluster, he asked not for conquest, but for a better world. As professor of American Studies Nicholas Mills notes, quote, with over 370 World War II veterans dying each day, this year's 75th anniversary of D-Day has a special poignancy. It reminds us that all those who on June 6, 1944, landed on the Normandy coast and began the last phase of World War II in Europe will soon be gone. He continues, like Gettysburg, D-Day marks a turning point in American history. In the case of Gettysburg, our memory of the battle is inseparable from the address President Abraham Lincoln delivered there 4 months later in November 1863. But it is often forgotten that D-Day, too, was memorialized in the year that it took place. He goes on to say, on June 6, President Roosevelt read over nationwide radio a prayer that earlier in the day the White House had sent to the newspapers across the country. As Nigel Hamilton notes in his brilliant new book, War and Peace, FDR's Final Odyssey, Roosevelt had put much thought into his D-Day prayer. He had composed it during a quiet weekend stay at the Charlottesville, Virginia home of his military aide, Major General Edwin Pa Watson. Now, the president, who had just addressed the nation the evening before as Allied forces had liberated Rome, spoke to the nation in a tone that was strikingly different from the night before as he asked the nation to join him in the 600-word prayer. You see, D-Day had opened up a long-awaited second front against Hitler, a concept that President Roosevelt and British Prime Minister Winston Churchill began discussing back in 1942. It was a risky undertaking, and the outcome, far from certain. Western civilization, freedom, hung in the balance.
My fellow Americans, last night when I spoke with you about the fall of Rome, I knew at that moment the troops of the United States and our allies were crossing the channel in another and greater operation. It has come to pass with success thus far. And so, in this poignant hour, I ask you to join with me in prayer. Almighty God, our sons, pride of our nation, this day have set upon a mighty endeavor. a struggle to preserve our republic, our religion, and our civilization, and to set free a suffering humanity. Lead them straight and true. Give strength to their arms, stoutness to their hearts, steadfastness in their faith. They will need thy blessings. Their road will be long and hard. For the enemy is strong. He may hurl back our forces. Success may not come with rushing speed, but we shall return again and again. And we know that by thy grace and by the righteousness of our cause, our sons will triumph. They will be sore tried by night and by day, without rest, until the victory is won. The darkness will be rent by noise and flame. Men's souls will be shaken with the violences of war. For these men are lately drawn from the ways of peace. They fight not for the lust of conquest. They fight to end conquest. They fight to liberate. They fight to let justice arise and tolerance and goodwill among all thy people. They yearn but for the end of battle, for their return to the haven of home. Some will never return. Embrace these, Father, and receive them, thy heroic servants, into thy kingdom. And for us at home, fathers, mothers, children, wives, sisters, and brothers of brave men overseas, whose thoughts and prayers are ever with them, help us, Almighty God, to rededicate ourselves in renewed faith in thee in this hour of great sacrifice. Many people have urged that I call the nation into a single day of special prayer. But because the road is long and the desire is great, I ask that our people devote themselves in a continuance of prayer as we rise to each new day, and again when each day is spent, let words of prayer be on our lips, invoking thy help to our efforts. Give us strength, too. Strengthen our daily tasks to redouble the contributions we make in the physical and the material support of our armed forces. And let our hearts be stout to wait out the long travel, to bear sorrows that may come, to impart our courage unto our sons, wheresoever they may be. And, O Lord, give us faith. Give us faith in thee, faith in our sons, faith in each other, faith in our united crusade. Let not the keenness of our spirit ever be dulled. Let not the impacts of temporary events, of temporal matters of but fleeting moment, let not these deter us in our unconquerable purpose. With thy blessing, we shall prevail over the unholy forces of our enemy. Help us to conquer the apostles of greed and racial arrogances. Lead us to the saving of our country, and with our sister nations into a world unity that will spell a sure peace, a peace invulnerable to the schemings of unworthy men, and a peace that will let all men live in freedom, reaping the just rewards of their honest toil. Thy will be done, Almighty God. Amen.
Well, God answered that prayer. Freedom for Europe was restored, and freedom for America and others was preserved. But it came at a high price. When we return, our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin joins us. His father was there in Normandy on D-Day. We'll talk with him, and we'll talk about President Trump's speech in Normandy earlier today. Don't go away.
Happy birthday to you.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy birthday, dear.
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Welcome back to this special D-Day edition of Washington Watch. 75 years ago on this date, Allied forces began Operation Overlord, which was the code name for the battle at Normandy. Joining me now to talk about this in a variety of context or ways, we want to talk about the president today, who I think gave probably even his critics are acknowledging that his speech today at Normandy was one of his best. And I think it was. It was remarkable. And I've got some clips I want to play for you of that. But I also want to talk about the price that was paid for this victory and for the freedom of Europe and to preserve the freedoms of America and America and others. Joining me now in studio is our own Lieutenant General Jerry Boykin, FRC's Executive Vice President. I was a member and a commander of the Army's Elite Special Forces Unit, the Green Beret. He was a founding member of the Delta Force in 1977. The Army put together the top secret unit now referred to as Delta Force. To qualify for Delta Force, General Boykin and others were required to go through the mountains in snow for 30 days. When he qualified for the Delta Force, the Army's psychiatrist worried about recommending the general for wasn't a general at that point, but for Delta Force on the grounds that he relied too heavily on his faith in God. Interesting, considering what we just heard from the president. However, he made it through and became a member of the Delta Force and later commanded all of Delta Force. General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Glad to be with you.
Now, I want to we're going to talk about the president's speech because it was a remarkable speech, just remarkable. But your father, Cecil Boykin, was there at D-Day.
He was, Tony. That's why this is always a special day for me. On the morning of the 6th of June, he was driving a landing craft, delivering, I think, elements of the 1st Infantry Division at Utah Beach, at Omaha Beach. And there was an explosion. His landing craft was hit by a German mortar. And he woke up in the Naval Hospital in Portsmouth, Virginia, and did not have a recollection of what happened. And you know, it's interesting. He was blind in his left eye. He went through life like that. But it was not until I took him to see Saving Private Ryan that it all – he finally broke loose and was willing to talk about it. But that was after, you know, watching my dad, you know, weeping through Private Ryan. You know, so he was reliving it, and And boy, I tell you, since that moment, though, I have spent a lot of time really studying the battle that day. And, you know, by the end of the day on the 6th of June, they had not taken any of their objectives there. But nonetheless, they succeeded.
And you were there not too long ago.
I was. And there's nothing, I think, more emotional for a soldier, you know, than walking the beaches of Normandy there and seeing the museums and all that. And it just represents a tremendous amount of sacrifice. And, you know, I was just telling somebody today on another program, you know, those young soldiers were 17, 18, 19 years old. These were teenagers. And they were not looking for a safe space other than on the other side of the German lines.
Yeah. And it's amazing as you read some of the letters that these young men wrote back to their families as they were embarking upon this invasion. Mm-hmm. I mean, this was so top secret. They didn't know exactly until the last moment where they were going, what was happening. So they took whatever they could and they scribbled out the notes to try to get back home.
Right. Yeah. We also need to remember, too, though, there was more than just the beaches in Normandy that day.
Right.
Three airborne divisions, two American and one British, parachuted in starting right after midnight on the day before. So, and then you had the OSS working with the French resistance movement there, running sabotage operations all through the German occupied territories there. So there was a lot more than just the beaches.
The largest military operation in history involving 156,000 men that were landing on the beaches, 1,200 planes, the airborne assaults that preceded the amphibious assault, which involved more than 5,000 vessels.
Mm-hmm.
It was a major, major operation, which they succeeded in basically keeping a secret.
That's right, and there were some very elaborate deception programs as well, and obviously the most obvious was putting George Patton up in northern England with rubberized tanks, and they literally built a fake army around George Patton because not only was Hitler convinced, but Rommel was convinced that Patton would lead the assault and he would come across at Calais. Because that was the shortest distance between the British Isles.
I think Patton was somewhat convinced that he was going to do it.
Well, I think he did until he got up there and they gave him rubber tanks. And then it dawned on him that he wasn't. But then there was also the deception of throwing a dead body dressed in a British military uniform off of a freighter on the coast of Spain with a dossier. And in that dossier was the whole plan, which showed them coming ashore at Calais. And the
elaborate deception.
That's right.
Absolutely right.
And it was eventually passed to the Germans.
General, when we come back, a little bit more about your father's story, because he didn't stop there. He went back into the military and ultimately retired with the Marine Corps.
Yeah, he did.
I want to talk about that.
I got skeletons in my closet.
And then some clips of the president today, a brilliant speech on the shores of Normandy. That's coming up next on this special D-Day edition of Washington Watch. Don't go away. General Jerry Boykin is here with me. I hope you'll stay around as well. Don't go away.
In states like New York, Virginia, and Vermont, radical legislation has been written legalizing abortion late in pregnancy, when babies can feel pain and are able to live outside the womb.
Happy birthday to you.
They've gone even further, repealing protections of infants born alive, allowing killing even after birth.
Happy
Congress has yet to protect the life of every newborn baby. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com to send Nancy Pelosi a newborn hat to show Congress every new life should be welcomed with warmth and love, not hate, not death. End birthday abortions. Visit endbirthdayabortion.com.
Happy birthday to you.
Paid for by Family Research Council.
The latest Trojan horse on Capitol Hill is called the Equality Act. The way the left is advertising this bill is misleading because it does not further equality at all. It would actually violate current protections in place that allow private institutions and people of faith to freely act in accordance to their deeply held beliefs. The Equality Act explicitly removes religious liberty protections that were originally put in place with bipartisan support. Its stated goal is equality, but its actual result is harm to vast members of communities, individuals, and Americans as a whole by undercutting our foundational freedom of religion. Is this really what equality looks like? A more fitting name for the Equality Act would be the Inequality Act. For more information on the mass threat of the Equality Act, visit frc.org/EqualityAct2019. That's frc.org/EqualityAct2019.
Can United States senators interrogate court nominees on their religious beliefs? This is a controversial question that our country is facing today. In light of this controversy, FRC has taken up the task of answering this question with one of their latest publications, Rebels Without a Clause. We've seen in recent Senate confirmation hearings a troubling pattern arise where senators have begun questioning presidential nominees about their faith as an attempt to discredit them. These interrogations have gone so far as to asking nominees of their theological beliefs, church membership, and associations with faith-based nonprofits. It has been an alarming display of hostility toward religion and people of faith. Visit frc.org/test to learn what questioning the Constitution's No Religious Test Clause allows and forbids in the process of confirming judicial nominees. That's frc.org/test.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm Tony Perkins. The website, TonyPerkins.com. Today, the 75th anniversary of the D-Day invasion that freed Europe, preserved freedom for the world as tyranny loomed heavy. General Jerry Boykin, my guest. General, we were talking about your father, Cecil Boykin, who was a part of the D-Day invasion, wounded in that invasion, lost an eye. But that didn't deter him from serving his country.
No, it's interesting. Tony came out of, he took a discharge because he was disabled and went back to the tobacco farm in North Carolina and married my mom, as a matter of fact, and started the family. But then in 1950, the Army announced that they had a program that would take disabled veterans that could still function into the Army. And, of course, they were ramping up for Korea. So he went back in the Army. They took him. And after the Korean War, he was discharged a second time. But he just, you know, he loved serving, and he just loved serving in the military. So he went back and spent the next 32 years with the Marine Corps as a civil servant, to include a tour in Vietnam and several Mediterranean cruises and so forth. So he spent his life in the military one way or the other, and he took it very seriously in terms of service to his country.
And obviously that had a lot of influence on you choosing to make a career out of the United States Army.
Absolutely. No question.
You know, I was reading some articles this morning, and the media just doesn't seem to get this president. They were over there, you know, interviewing some of these 60 World War II veterans that made the trip over to be there for the 75th anniversary. And, you know, they were trying to look for those that would be criticizing the president because that he is backing away from, you know, these transatlantic agreements and
relations.
Yeah. And every one of them they interviewed said, we love this president.
Yeah.
You know, as if they could, they would put the uniform back on and they would serve again.
Yeah.
And I think there's a reason why not only men who are serving or women who are serving, but certainly veterans that appreciate this president. Part of it is you saw it in his speech today as he spoke of those that were there and served. And I want to play a couple of clips from the president's speech today in Normandy. Let's play, Bobby, play clip number 4.
Private First Class Russell Pickett, of the 29th Division's famed 116th Infantry Regiment had been wounded in the first wave that landed on Omaha Beach. At a hospital in England, Private Pickett vowed to return to battle. "I'm going to return," he said. "I'm going to return." 6 days after D-Day, he rejoined his company. Two-thirds had been killed already. Many had been wounded within 15 minutes of the invasion. They lost 19 just from the small town of Bedford, Virginia alone. Before long, a grenade left Private Pickett, and he was gravely wounded, so badly wounded. Again, he chose to return. He didn't care. He had to be here. He was then wounded a third time and laid unconscious for 12 days. They thought he was gone. They thought he had no chance. Russell Pickett is the last known survivor of the legendary Company A. And today, believe it or not, he has returned once more to these shores to be with his comrades. Private Pickett, you honor us all with your presence.
That was just one of several stories that the president told, some of which were there honoring him. And of course, you saw one of the clips where he actually embraced one of the veterans.
Yeah. He went over and hugged this old veteran. Yeah. It got me, I'll tell you that. It got to me. And but, you know, he said something else, Tony. He said that they were propelled by a force that no weapon could destroy. That was quite a statement. If you analyze what he was saying, number one, the fighting spirit of the American soldier. But he was also saying that the hand of God.
Well, let's play that clip. I've got that clip. Yeah. Clip number five, Bobby.
These men ran through the fires of hell, moved by a force no weapon could destroy, the fierce patriotism of a free, proud, and sovereign people. They battled not for control and domination, but for liberty, democracy, and self-rule. They pressed on for love and home and country, the main streets, the schoolyards, the churches, and neighbors, the families, and communities that gave us men such as these. They were sustained by the confidence that America can do anything, because we are a noble nation with a virtuous people praying to a righteous God. The exceptional might came from a truly exceptional spirit. The abundance of courage came from an abundance of faith. The great deeds of an army came from the great depths of their love. As they confronted their fate, the Americans of the Allies placed themselves into the palm of God's hand.
Again, just a remarkable speech. And, you know, when you earlier, as we played the prayer of FDR, I know Ronald Reagan was really good about this, but I tell you, this president is invoking America's faith in God in a more prominent way than I think any president in my lifetime.
Tony, he cannot be intimidated. I mean, he just refuses to be intimidated by the people that want to take all vestiges of faith out of our military. And I got to tell you, this is as good a speech as I've ever heard anybody give at any military ceremony or military occasion.
You know, when he talks about what motivated these men, these young men, 18, 19, 20-year-old men, who many of them, when they saw what they had to do, they realized they probably weren't going to come back.
That's right.
But they went anyway.
Yeah.
they wrote in their letters to their families that there was this transcendent cause that you talk about.
Right.
That the sacrifice was worth it because America was an exceptional nation, and it meant something to be an American, and it was worth the sacrifice. Those virtues were somewhat common in that day, more common than today, but fortunately our nation, our families continue to produce young men and women who are willing to make those sacrifices. But my fear is that if we lose that faith, that foundation that the president made reference to today in Normandy and that FDR prayed about 75 years ago, if we lose that foundation, how will we produce those individuals willing to make sacrifice?
Let me tell you, as far as I'm concerned, when you have a military without a foundation of faith, you have a mercenary organization. The fact of the matter is our entire system of laws in the military, Uniform Code of Military Justice, is based on a Judeo-Christian foundation. And when you have people that are going into combat and they don't know whether they're going to live or die, but, you know, they don't consider where they will spend the eternity, you've got a dangerous organization there. But if you go back and look at some of the photos of men and women crossing into Iraq since 9/11 or crossing into Afghanistan, and they have makeshift baptismals. Mm-hmm. They have ponchos in the ditches with water on them trying to get baptized before they go across because they want that relationship with God before they go across. I will tell you that the last administration did everything they could to stop that kind of open, free worship in our military. And this president is restoring that, and he's restoring it very rapidly. And you see it, I think, a lot in just the morale of our military today.
Well, of course, it's very important for those who are serving in our nation's military, but it is just as important that our families are free to exercise their faith so that we raise young men and women who are already rooted in the faith, who from that faith, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I can tell you from my experience, and I'm sure, and I know you can't do it because we've talked about it, is that those who are drawn to military service are disproportionately Christians.
Yeah.
Because it says, Jesus said, greater love hath no man than to lay down his life for his friends. Christians, believers, followers of Jesus understand sacrifice and are willing to make those sacrifices.
Yeah.
And so I don't know if it's intentional, but those who are seeking to destroy that element of faith and religious freedom in our country are indirectly putting at risk the very future of our country.
Well said. That's exactly what they're doing. And again, you look at those men that came across the beach in 1944, and you say, what kind of men would do this? Well, when they stepped off of those landing craft, it was no longer about the flag. It was about the guy on their left and right, the guy in front of them, the guy behind them. And it is the same today in our military. These young men and women go into some abysmal situations, and at some point it transitions to being a transcendent cause of wanting to make sure that they don't let their buddy down because they know that he won't let them down.
And I think it's important, and I think the president made reference to this, that it's important that this example, that 75 years in the rearview mirror has been forgotten by many, and it's not taught in our schools any longer. And this example must be held up. And the president, he made reference to this as he was closing his speech. Play clip six, Bobby.
To the men who sit behind me and to the boys who rest in the field before me, your example will never ever grow old. Your legend will never die. Your spirit, brave, unyielding, and true, will never die.
And it's up to us. It's up to this generation and subsequent generations to pass that example on. And of course, we've seen that in every military operation that America has been engaged in since World War II. I mean, we look at World War II, the Greatest Generation, where collectively the entire nation fought that war. But as I said earlier, I am so grateful that America, American families, mm-hmm. continue to produce men and women who are willing to make those sacrifices. But it won't happen unless we continue to set and uphold examples.
I was, as you know, I was in a conference this week, and John McLaughlin was there. He's a pollster. He does some of the great polling in America today. And he actually told us that they polled a group of young Americans between 18 and 30, and that about 60% of them were not proud to be Americans. Not proud to be Americans. That is such a shock to my system. But part of the reason is because they haven't been taught about D-Day. They haven't been taught about the 18 and 19-year-olds that came across that beach that day, knowing that they may never go home again. But they were willing to pay that price because their government had sent them, and they believed in their government. They had confidence in their government. And number two, they didn't want to let their buddies down there. And if we taught them that, and we taught the sacrifices that were made, but what it ultimately did in terms of changing the course of world history,
right.
saved an entire continent, two continents actually, when you go to Japan right. and the Asian continent. So,
and we did it for nothing.
That's right.
In terms of we didn't ask for anything
no.
other than the ground to right. bury our dead.
That's right. That's right. And if we taught that, how can you help but be proud? But that's exactly why this kind of history has been taken out of the curriculum in so many of our public school systems. It's a matter of robbing us of our identity.
And that's why, again, it's important as parents, as grandparents, to teach and to instill in our children and grandchildren this understanding. It's important to take these opportunities like we are today, taking the entire radio program to talk about D-Day,
yep.
To take them to Memorial Day
yeah.
services, to,
right.
to celebrate the 4th of July and all that. I mean, those type of things. If we don't do it,
right.
it's certainly not going to happen in the schools. It's not going to happen from the media. It's not going to happen from Hollywood. It's up to us to do that.
And part of the problem is my generation has let this happen, and my generation is responsible because we sat back for 50 years and watched the school systems gradually and incrementally remove history, critical history, about our founding fathers as well as the wars we fought.
Well, America's future depends upon the courage of people.
Yes.
Americans, as That's it right. always has. Now more than ever, the type of courage that's needed is moral courage.
Absolutely.
General, thanks so much
Good
for
to be
joining
with
us.
You.
Folks, thanks so much. Thanks so much for joining us. I leave you with the words of the Apostle Paul, found in Ephesians 6. He says, when you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.